Hello and welcome back to the Adamsons Versus. We hope you enjoyed our last episode, the Adamsons Versus the Government. This month we're taking on another entitled arsehole in Elon Musk, who my co-host, also called James Adamson.
Hello there.
He has decided to name him Scrooge McMusk, because it is the festive season after all. And he's obviously very topical at the moment, not like an ointment for your balls, but topical in the sense that he's in the news for being a cunt. So, how did this one come about?
I guess we were kind of... I was away for a little while at the beginning of December, which meant time to get anything done this month got a little bit compressed. You'll be aware, loyal listeners, that we have another film-related podcast, Double Reel, which we've just finished doing our sort of final episode of the year, getting it out just for Christmas. And we said, oh, we haven't done an Adamsons Versus this month. We really should do one. And we were sitting there thinking, okay, well, if we're going to do an Adamsons Versus and get it out, you know, at this time of year, maybe we could have some sort of Christmas theme. And it sort of occurred to me that maybe we could do something about, you know, Musk, who is like the modern day Scrooge and the modern day kind of rich person sort of throwing his weight about, fucking everybody about, and asking to see if we can get people to, almost in the little bit in the style of Christmas Carol. We're not going to do Ghosts of Christmas Past and all of that, but just see if we can look back on the... how we got to where we are, look at the future and see what it would take for Scrooge McMusk to change his ways. So it's just a little bit, you know, to try and get into the Christmas spirit of things while also, you know, doing our usual flinging poo and throwing insults at somebody and try and merge that into one unified theme.
I'm a bit offended by that because I'm more of a Hanukkah man myself, so...
We could do this for Hanukkah as well. I'm not sure what the... You have to light 7 candles and there's a story for each one, but that's all I know about Hanukkah.
Yeah, but they're all electric and you have to stay at work all day while you light them.
That's right, yeah. Elon Musk's version of Hanukkah. Yeah, that'd be very good.
So, before we get into the juicy meat of this feast of a podcast, I'd like to just kind of whet your appetites with a little appetizer. So...
Just before you do,
entree before the entree.
That's right. There's a little bit of a tie-in here in that the Adamsons Versus, you know, often has the odd thematic link to our other podcast, Double Reel. And at the end of the last Double Reel podcast, James was sort of swearing and shouting about DPD, who had obviously incurred his wrath. And
was that at the end of the last one? No, it wasn't. Was it that recent?
Well, the one that's just about to go out. You were saying fuck DPD and really cross with them.
And, film one, yes.
Yeah, and at the end of Double Reel, you got angry with DPD. For those of you who listen to both podcasts, and I know there's a few of you, the tantalising prospect of what went up with DPD is now going to be answered in the other podcast. I just wanted to kind of tie in the two episodes.
Tony, this one's for you.
I'm offended by that. It's Tony and Mike.
Sorry, Mike. So, we live in a little quiet part of the world just outside Glasgow, and I mean quiet. We are the youngest people here by about 50 years. Everyone's old as fuck. And it's great. It's so quiet. But with that, it means that nothing really happens, and when something does happen, it's really easy to spot. So, we've recently got puppies and another puppy. Say hello, Mac. He's fast asleep. And we were walking the puppies, and, well, my partner was, and one of the neighbours came outside and said, look, hold on. A DPD driver's hit your car. And we were like, oh, shit. I've got his details. Turns out they'd only managed to get his number because the guy left the number and then fucked off. They didn't get a chance to get his licence plate. So anyway, we're like, okay, we'll give this number a phone. And actually, for the listeners of the podcast, I'll let them listen to what I've had to listen to. Let's make sure I phone the right number there, because, yeah, in case someone gets a phone call they're not expecting, right?
Imagine if you got straight through. Yeah, you're live on the Adamsons Versus. Why are you a cunt?
Yeah, and I phoned the mother-in-law, and she's like, hello? Right, so this is what happens when you phone this number the guy left after hitting my partner's car. Fuck. There we are.
Please try again later. Possible to connect your call. Please try again later.
So that's what... So he's left a number that he can't get through to. So, I'm very angry at this point. So this happened on the Saturday, and it took me till the Thursday. No, the Friday. It took me 6 days to figure out where this cunt worked. And because there's many depots in Glasgow, now I'm not going to reveal the location, but he worked at a specific one. And during all of this, we'd been in contact with the police. After 24 hours, if you fail to report an incident, it becomes a crime. And I'm letting this driver know. I'm sending him text to the number that doesn't work saying this has now become a criminal issue. I'm letting the police know. The case gets assigned to a police officer and he's chasing them up. But basically, I did like a lot of like the legwork for him. I said, save you like going through head office. This is the number for the specific depot you need to contact. And in the meantime, I get a phone call from what's called like their executive team. And I get put through to this gentleman. And he says, right, let me investigate this. So he phones up the depot and he says, look, this driver's this person's car. And we got a description of the driver. Now, without being insensitive, he was described as a well-built African gentleman by my neighbour who went out and, you know, spoke to the guy. So I felt like that kind of narrowed things down because how many people were delivering parcels to, you know, that address at that time that that matched that description? And they were being very kind of awkward about it. They said, well, that's not the way of doing things, you know, just saying, oh, well, that guy matches the description, so we're going to have to ask him if he hit your partner's car. And I said, well, I'm not saying I'm annoyed he hit my partner's car because he's black. I'm annoyed because he hit my partner's car and went away. There's nothing to do with the skin colour, but they got very funny when I mentioned his description. Now, I wouldn't have cared if it was a skinny Polish guy or a person with, like, olive skin. You know what I mean? Doesn't matter. You hit my partner's car and you did a fucking runner, you prick. So anyway, they're doing a lot of humming and hawing, and basically this guy says, right, I'll speak to the depot. So he speaks to the depot and he says, right, there's a driver that matches this description. Right, okay. Yeah. He says, I'll read the email. Yeah, here we are. That he doesn't accept that he did the damage to the car, but not denying that he hit the car. Now, bearing in mind, what's mental about this is my partner's car was about 3 inches from the curb. She hadn't parked like a fucking idiot in the middle of the road. She was parked very close to the curb, very nicely parked. And this cunt's obviously been on his phone to check where his next delivery was, and then not noticed and swerved and like had to last minute hit the wing mirror and just before the wheel arch done a massive dent and scrape.
Yeah.
And damaged the van as well because there was you know the red reflectors that are on your brake lights?
Yeah.
They were smashed up on the ground down next to the car, and it wasn't my partner's car because her brake lights were fine. It was the front of the car that got damaged. So anyway,
and you've got photographs of all of this as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can post them with the podcast if you need to. I don't know if that affects any insurance, so don't do that.
All right.
The driver says, oh, he didn't do the damage, but didn't deny that he hit the car. And the email said, so as we can't establish, like, whether there's any truth to him having, like, hit the car, we can't accept that he is liable. So here's an insurance reference, and your insurance company can battle out with our insurance company to determine who's at fault. And my reply was rather angry.
It sounds like this is, like, what he's been instructed to do or something. This is how they normally do things.
Yeah, so let's see if I can... So what did he say? Yeah... We have no further evidence to conclude the driver's at fault. The incident report has been reported to Aviva, but let the insurance companies determine who's liable, basically. So I said, didn't threaten, but was very angry. So I said, so because your driver said he didn't do it, we're going to say that he didn't do it. No worries. Get him back down to our address with a police officer and my neighbour who watched him hit the car and he can identify him. Did you ask him why he gave a fake mobile number? Because giving a number to contact him suggests that he accepts that damage was done. I said, this is far from over. Ram your Aviva reference and wait for Police Scotland to contact you. As far from kindest regards as I can possibly go, James Adamson.
Hey!
So, the next reply was, I'd phoned the police officer. And he went, go CC me in this, sir. I said, I've CC'd the police officer who's dealing with the case and I'm including the number you gave me last week. So the number, not like the generic head office number, but the specific guy who works for DPD at the executive
bit. The phone number that doesn't work.
Yeah. No. So DPD Customer Services is the fucking... So there's more to this, how bad DPD are in general. Where was I?
You copied him in and you left and you included the number that you tried to call before.
So I got this email on the Friday and they're obviously off all weekend. So I phone him like at 10 past 8 on Monday morning. And I say, hello, I spoke to you regarding this incident with my partner's car. He went, oh yeah, well, you just can't accept liability if he's saying he didn't do it. And I went, well, that's the best defence ever. Do you imagine if Adolf Hitler had ever been like to the Nuremberg trials and he said, oh, I didn't gas the Jews. Oh, well, we'll just fucking take his word for that. He said he didn't fucking do it. So, the guy was like, all right, okay. And I said, you know this, I've gone to the police now and it's no longer a civil matter between my partner and DPD. We are now pushing for criminal charges and it'll be criminal charges against the driver. So they were like, all right. And I was like, would you like to let the driver know? And turns out the driver was being a prick because he's a franchisee. So that basically means is that he has his own van and he's basically like, he has like a contract with DPD. He's like kind of like an external contractor.
Yeah.
So I think the insurance is a little bit different. Doesn't matter. Don't care. You hit the partner's car. Drive better, you cunt.
Or leave the right number, leave your insurance details, get it sorted out, pay a bit more on your insurance premium next year and we'll fucking get on with our lives, right?
Yep. So yesterday, after I'd basically said this is now a criminal matter, he said, good afternoon, James. So I've been able to liaise with the depot and they've advised the franchisee had accepted liability when reporting the incident to Aviva. Below, I've attached a contact number for Aviva so you can address the repairs with them. Aviva number, blah, 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 blah. So only after I threatened the police to have to identify this driver and threatened criminal action did DPD accept that their driver might have done something wrong. Now, in and amongst all this, that's just the kind of general timeline. I had to spend 6 days phoning DPD and it gets outsourced to, I think, South Africa. The phone lines are terrible there. Like, the connection's awful. They can't hear what you're saying. But the people they have on the end of the phones there are pathological liars.
Oh, I tell you what. A completely different company, not EPD, but a South Africa-based call centre, was exactly the same as you've just described. Terrible, terrible phone quality and absolute arseholes at the other end. But please carry on. It's obviously a thing.
That's pathological liars, man. Like,
that's where you go and you want absolute arseholes for your call centre.
So it happened on the Saturday. So obviously over the weekend, they're limited hours. So I phone on the Sunday. They're open between like 9 and 3 p.m. So I phone them at like 11:30. And I said, look, I'm not happy about this. Like, how do I deal with this? And you know what the real problem was? They wouldn't let me phone customer services without providing a delivery number. And the latest, this is how fucking stupid these cunts are. The last delivery I'd made was for your Christmas presents.
Yeah.
So what I was doing was I was having to phone, put in the reference for the delivery to you down in England. Yeah. And they were going, oh, but we thought the incident happened in Hampstead or something mental. And I went, what the fuck are you... No, Dunstable, that's where it is. And I went, what the fuck are you talking about? Do I fucking sound like I'm from fucking Dunstable? You fucking Constable. So anyway, they were doing that and they were, this is why nothing was happening for 6 days. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm really sorry because we thought it was... I was like, what are you fucking talking about? Why did you think it was in Dunstable? So I said that, look, the only way I can get through to you is using this reference number, but set up a separate thing saying it happened at my address in Glasgow. And they went, right, okay, what we're going to do is we'll do this. And I went, right, well, I don't think you're being much use here. Can I speak to somebody above you or someone who's actually going to get me a solution? She went, okay, yeah, my supervisor will phone you at 3:00. Alarm bells ring. I said, 3:00, you guys close at 3:00. And she went, no, we close at 5:00. And I went, right, so someone's definitely going to phone me at 3:00. 4:15, nobody's phoned. I go to phone DPD. Our offices are now closed, please try again tomorrow. And I was like, you are fucking, like, I've been openly lied to. And I was meant to get about 6 callbacks from DPD customer services about this thing. I ended up going like a psycho ex-girlfriend and going onto Google and seeing different parts of like, there's like 4 different depots. There's one like out by Motherwell, there's one out by like these, all these different places.
Yeah.
And I was like Googling and the number had been posted online and I'm phoning the depot and some poor guy's like, hello? And like, one of your drivers hit my car. Where do you live? Or, you know, it's no this depot, it's this one. So I'm having to do what the customer services should be doing because they refused to phone the depot. They were saying, oh yeah, I can't get through to the depot right now. I hung up the phone and within 2 minutes of that woman saying she couldn't get through to the depot, I found the number, I got through them and I said, yeah, this fucking bitch at the call centre saying that she's not even bothered to phone you. So thankfully there's a resolution, but it's in like 3 weeks, nearly 3 weeks after the car was hit.
Yeah,
that I had to, you know, had to do it. And I might update the police officer, but I kind of like the idea of the franchisee still getting a scare from the police as it is. But I probably should tell the police that it's been resolved. But I'll only tell them it's been resolved once the car's been fixed and paid for.
Yeah.
because I don't trust these cunts as far as I can fucking throw them. So if anyone's listening, I know we are in the UK, we are limited for choice, seeing as the Royal Mail don't actually go to work because they're lazy work shy assholes.
let's take a more balanced view of the current wave of strikes affecting the UK another time.
Fuck them. They're lazy work shy assholes. Go to work. Do your job. I'm kidding. If you want a strike, you want a strike. I'm glad that people are taking a stand, but they don't go to work. That's the balanced view of it is that it's hard to get the Royal Mail to deliver a parcel at the moment because they're not at fucking work.
I get it. You can't use Royal Mail at the moment. Understood.
DHL, another story about them. They're fucking imbeciles. They refused to go and deliver a parcel here because there was roadworks just outside and they stopped at the roadworks. We saw the DHL van and the guy said couldn't be delivered when he could have just parked up and walked up to the flat. They're useless. Hermes, they're not even called Hermes anymore because their reputation was that bad that they had to change it to something else. I don't even know what they're called anymore. Herpes. And that leaves us really with DPD, but I implore you to stop using these cunts. Use a carrier pigeon if you have to, because they're a disgrace. It's a disgrace, in the words of Didier Drogba. They're horrible. They are scumbags. Her pal works, like, she handles calls for, like, the emergency services. And she said that over that same weekend, 6 other DPD drivers were reported for hitting other vehicles and doing a runner.
Jesus Christ.
Just in Glasgow.
That's amazing.
Yep. Scumbags. Scumbags.
But a happy ending in that you finally got through and got some action.
Like a time sus. So the way you said that there. A happy ending and you got some action.
I didn't mean it like that.
Love you long time too. So
a heartwarming Christmas tale, I think you'll all agree. So with that small introduction out of the way and a little segue from our Double Reel podcast, let's see if I can tie this in with the rest of the theme. All of these terrible things happen because people at the top of companies, CEOs, you think they're cleverer than the rest of us, end up screwing things over and leaving us all with shit customer service and poor conditions to kind of try and do, you know, get things done in. And perhaps the most famous kind of powerful CEO who's affecting the world at the moment is Elon Musk. So nicknaming him Scrooge McMusk to try and see if he'll change his ways, we thought we'd have a little look at this guy's in the headlines at the moment. He's obviously known for being a sort of a tech innovator in the Tesla electric car, and being a fairly high profile sort of billionaire, you know, inventor with, you know, SpaceX and various other things. But at the moment, he's most famous for Twitter. And at this moment, he seems to be locked in a weird sort of battle with God knows who, running Twitter, which, you know, and sort of almost in a series of sideshow arguments that involve Donald Trump, Kanye West, and all of the weirdest people online. And almost like, I don't know if he's trolling the whole world. I don't know if he's having problems with Twitter. We'll probably get into that. But right at this moment, he really is sort of quite famous and, you know, probably higher profile than he's ever been and quite unpopular for various things that he's done. And to try and kind of get this into the spirit of Christmas, we want to just call out Elon Musk, see how we got to where we got to now, see what the future might hold, and see if we can just send him a message, some positive vibes, to see if he can stop being a cunt for Christmas and make that his present, his gift to the world this year is to stop being such a cunt. Which I think is what Charles Dickens was really saying about Ebenezer Scrooge. So if we look into this, James, obviously, you'll be aware of Elon Musk. What are your what are your impressions of him? Before we said we're going to do the Scrooge McMusk thing, what are your impressions of Elon Musk? What generally springs to mind when you think of Elon Musk?
Well, I used to find him quite amusing because all of these CEOs of these big companies tend to be quite bland, and he would post like funny memes on Twitter, and he just seemed like a bit of a... When he went on that podcast and smoked a joint, I thought that was quite funny. You know what I mean? Like, he seemed like a more human kind of person. But see, when you actually... You kind of read into him, he's... I don't think he's the worst cunt to own a company.
No.
But the fact that he's... You know, I always say that you don't look at the person, you look at the person that guy associates with or is trying to, like, you know, get on board with. And, you know, one of the first things he did on Twitter was unban all the accounts for freedom of speech, and he let cunts like Andrew Tate back online, and then, you know, he seems to be like, you know, Donald Trump and Kanye West were kind of championing him, or like, you know, those are the names that are being associated with him right now.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of think. I mean, Kanye West right now is a mentally ill man who loves Hitler. So that guy needs to be mentally sectioned, because he's, you know, he needs help. Right in the head.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump, he's a lost cause. He needs to be put down. He just needs to be deflated like an airbed. So, you know what I mean? So that's the only, that's what I find quite worrying about.
Imagine the kind of noxious air that would come out of Donald Trump if you let all the air out of him. Imagine what that would fucking smell like. Jesus Christ. Anyway.
Yeah, I bet that's how they make anthrax.
I know what you mean. I mean, in some ways, he's like the biggest and richest and most powerful version of what we've been finding out over the last 10, 15 years, is that these tech billionaires, these people who came through and set up new companies and were innovators in all these different ways, they gave this initial impression of being like different and better than your typical CEO. And you're right, he's not as bad as the Koch brothers. He's not as bad as, you know, some of the most like genuinely kind of sick and you know, the people who were like, you know, influencing government policy so they can sell more weapons and kill more children with fucking napalm. He's obviously not there. But there was this element of, oh, these guys are a new breed, they're different and everything else. And then Steve Jobs turned out to be a bit weird and unpleasant. And all these other kind of tech billionaires, they might well be wearing like Converse and kind of baseball caps and fucking, you know, chilling and being bros all the time. But they're actually kind of the same. They're kind of, they have this kind of mindset that's seems a little bit sociopathic. And with Elon Musk, it is a... It's kind of a weird one, because he's what he's doing now seems a long way from where he started out. I mean, obviously he's built up this kind of persona, but where he came from is that he invented or is one of the people behind PayPal. You know, if you go back to how he kind of started out, he comes from a family in South Africa with they were wealthy. He had means and resources that, you know, most people could barely dream of. And he did, you know, he started out with millions and now he's got billions. So fair play to him. He's certainly done a lot more with his kind of wealthy starting life than Donald Trump did. Donald Trump isn't an actually bad businessman. Whereas, you know, Elon Musk has done a lot. But he founded a company called Zip2. I don't know exactly what they did. It was some sort of internet city guide. It happened in the 90s. Compaq bought it for $307 million. Dollars in 1999. I mean, Compaq doesn't even exist anymore. It's, you know, but it was current in the 90s. Might as well have been current in the 1800s, the way technology moves. And then he came up with a company called X.com, which was an online financial services and email payment company. It was sort of an online bank, and now now online banks are very much a thing now. So he's always been ahead of the game, and he set up, you know, he founded or was a big part of, like, you know, PayPal. Which obviously has, again, nowadays transferring money online is something you can do all the time, but PayPal still exists and was revolutionary when it came out. Wow, you can buy shit on eBay or buy stuff online from some complete stranger and your money's safe. So he's kind of an innovator, and he became very wealthy because, you know, PayPal was acquired for $1.5 billion in stock, you know, and Musk made hundreds of millions of dollars for that. And Not content with that, he went and set up a SpaceX, and all the discussion of SpaceX is, you know, we're going to send people to Mars. We're going to put spaceships on Mars, and this sounds all pie in the sky. And you think, well, how can this guy afford to just fanny about building spaceships that might go to Mars when we might be 50 or 100 years away from actually being able to do that? Turns out, what SpaceX does on a daily basis is that they're the people transporting pretty much everyone up to the International Space Station.
Yeah, they're like a courier.
Yeah, and thanks to him, you don't have to rely on the Russians, right? Who are the only people who seem to have, like, cost-effective and readily available kind of, spacecraft that'll take you to the ISS and back. And NASA, they do a lot of work on the International Space Station. They rely on Musk for his space hacking. He's basically like a space taxi. And I don't mean to make that sound like I'm underplaying the achievement. I think that's amazing. It's like, you know, all the resources that NASA has, and this guy off his own back goes, yeah, I'll take you up to the ISS and back. And NASA goes, thank God, we were fucking struggling with that. And so he's, you know, and he set up any number of companies. He developed Starlink, so low Earth orbit satellites, which is, you know, and he's kind of this guy who went, I've got an idea. It might work. It might not work, or it might kind of partly work, and there'll be something interesting in it that someone else will kind of buy and develop and turn into things. You know, PayPal and online banking have revolutionized the world, and he basically invented it. And he's making, you know, space travel more of a possible, you know, reality, you know, later this century. And then the thing that's kind of really made his name was Tesla Motors. And he, with Tesla, though, although he's associated with Tesla, I think that company had already been set up by two other guys, Martin Eberhard and Eric and Mark Tarpening. But Musk came in with like serious investment and money. He became the majority shareholder and joined Tesla's board of directors as chairman. And since he took over, Tesla became like a genuine reality where electric cars that work and, you know, work, you know, again, have changed the game because now everyone's trying to do electric cars. Well, Tesla were the people who kind of got there first. And some of these cars, you know, are very impressive. You know, it's like it's your, you can drive it around at your average car, but its top speed is like 200 miles an hour, 150 miles.
Yeah, they're rapid. Yeah,
they're really impressive cars. And he's constantly pushing the boundaries and saying, right, we're going to do an electric truck. We're going to come up with an electric car that everyone can drive. And he's constantly, so on this side of things, you kind of go, well, that's really kind of cool. Because like you say, he's obviously an innovator. He's obviously a different thinker. He's the one who's saying, you know, we can maybe get space travel up there and we can carry on the great work that happens on the International Space Station. Some amazing scientific research goes on there. We need satellites. We need probably do need to be able to travel to space because I think we're fucking, you know, this planet, needs fucking help. And he's also come up with electric cars, which again might save the planet. So all of this stuff on the face of it made Elon Musk sound like really one of the people of the future. So I don't know how he suddenly turned into this kind of massive prick. I think that, but I mean, like you say, I think he's probably always been a bit like this because he refused to block Russian state media when he was Starlink. He says he's a free speech absolutist. He's always been a bit, he's never been afraid to kind of exploit a situation for his own benefit. And early on in Tesla's kind of history, he did oust the founders of the company and took the whole thing over for himself. So he's always had a ruthless streak. He's always been the kind of person who, you know, and stuff has come out about him since this Twitter stuff came about. You think, oh yeah, he's this kind of bro, he's this new, he's innovative, but he still makes people work fucking 18-hour days, you know, and kind of he's a bit eccentric and kind of makes people, you know, he's hard to work for, and all sorts of stories have come out about him since Twitter happened. So on the face of it, while he is doing sort of new, you know, and interesting stuff in his business life, he's always been a bit of a prick, would you say?
I would agree that he's ruthless. I think people just have a different perception of him now.
Yeah.
I think people are maybe kind of perceiving that ruthlessness as now, oh, he's a bit of a fucking cunt. The problem I have with him is that it's the arrogance and the infallibility with the guy.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like he put that poll on Twitter and I don't think he expected it to be a case of he'd be forced to resign as CEO if the poll said that the people of Twitter wanted him to go. But then he was like, oh, be careful what you wish for and blah 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 and all that kind of stuff tweeting afterwards rather than just accepting defeat. You know, he's not very gracious. But yeah, I don't know what's happened.
Yeah, you see, the stuff that's come out about him, you see, I think you're right. I think you've put your finger on quite a thing about Elon Musk is that he's one of those people, and you get people like this in all walks of life, but when they're billionaires and can actually affect the outcome of, like, elections, governments, and, you know, world communication, it's all magnified. He is one of those people who, he's obviously very, very smart, and he's obviously very, very talented, and there's obviously some things he's very, very good at. But he's one of those people who thinks because he's good at those things, he thinks that makes him good at everything. And he's finding out that it doesn't, because Twitter is a completely different game to some of the other things that he's worked. Twitter has data protection, safeguarding, legal. It has ramifications for people in dictatorships for whom social media might be the only way that they can actually talk to each other and talk to the rest of the world about what's happening. There's a whole lot of stuff going on with Twitter, similar with stuff like Facebook, where the stakes are higher and the consequences are different. And he's not necessarily good at what he now does. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And but stuff has come out about him, which was always there. And again, you hit the nail on the head, mate. This is what's coming out about him now because everything is so high profile about him now. You know, he was back when he was like running Tesla. You know, even early days, he was like, you know, he would scream and shout at like engineers. You know, verbally abuse them, throw them out because he disagreed with them. He would publicly humiliate and demote people. Staff were discouraged from walking too near his desk because he was prone to unpredictable rages. He didn't treat people well. And when people sort of get angry unpredictably, they end up getting a bit bizarre. It's stuff like you hear about Steve Jobs, and some of these things might have got bigger in the telling. Like he wore a nappy in the office because he didn't want to have to go to the toilet. He was too busy working. He used to park in the disabled bay just because he fucking could, and it was his company, which is just a shitty thing to do. It's like you're the owner of the company. Surely you've got a decent parking space. And this is the, you know, similar stuff like him, and he's like and now that it's, you know, coming round to, you know, Twitter is bringing all of this stuff to light, but he's always been a bit of an asshole to work for. And we have a culture in society now, don't we? Almost, and it's a mixture of, if someone is an asshole but they're really successful, it's okay that they're an asshole. It's like one argument. And the other argument they make is, maybe you have to be an asshole to succeed. It's like, you can only succeed by being a fucking absolute prick and treating people like shit and being a shyster and all of this stuff. And I'm not suggesting Elon Musk is necessarily a shyster, but we have this culture in society that says, almost like, the more someone acts like a prick, the more we let them act like a prick. And he has gone all the way over the top with that.
Oh. Yeah. It's interesting because I don't think people have liked his Twitter policies because everyone uses Twitter. Like, I don't know how I feel about the whole, he could slip into rages and he could shout at people, because I imagine, are we getting the full story there?
We're getting the story of people who he fired from his company, to be fair. So they may now, well, be telling the worst.
Are they hiding their own incompetence? So I don't like using those examples. What's annoying me about the whole Twitter thing is that Twitter as a business was hemorrhaging like $4 million a day.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come in and tried to make it. That's what he does. He makes money, and people don't like that. He said, well, I'm going to get people to pay $8 a month for the blue tick. Oh, why are you doing that? Blah, blah, blah. I'm leaving Twitter. And it's like, oh, the folk like Stephen King getting really annoyed that they have to pay $8 a month for a blue tick when Stephen King has to sell one book and that's him for the month. Do you know what I mean? Like, people are not understanding why he's doing what he's doing to Twitter. It's not working because people on Twitter are the worst. Twitter is a fucking cesspit. And they're like, oh, why are you changing this thing that's making, like, no money? Because the people that use Twitter don't understand how Twitter's meant to make money, and it's not. So Elon Musk has bought it and said, right, we need to make money, and it's become this thing where, you know, he feels like free speech needs to be at the forefront of the of that website, and people are just not liking that. And because people are not liking that, he can't really win. It's like the Democrats trying to get anything passed through the House of Representatives because it's dominated by the Republicans. It's sort of like that. He wants to make these changes, and nobody's liking them, so he's having to renege on all of these changes, and the company is still going to hemorrhage $3 to $4 million a
now
day.
Are you aware of whether the Twitter was hemorrhaging this money before he took over, or is it hemorrhaging money now?
He took over and had a look at the accounts, and it's making fuck all money.
Right.
It's so, losing all this money, and he's trying to make changes. So little changes, like if you want the blue tick, pay $8. And then ended up not working because people started ripping the cunt out of it and looking at verified accounts.
Yeah, and well, the thing was, this is the thing. He takes an idea, and where he partly went wrong with that, so he didn't say, if you want a blue tick, pay $8, but only if you're a verified, like, because the whole point of a blue tick is that you need to, it's to verify a public figure or a journalist or people who actually have a public profile, and it's quite important to them not to be kind of imitated by anybody else. What he said was, oh, anyone can have a blue tick if they pay $8.
Yeah.
And again, that's because in his, I've seen people like this before. When you sit in the boardroom and you throw out an idea, you throw it out, and if you're in the kind of culture where, well, he's the boss, we've got to do it, even though this is flawed or even though this is ridiculous, people go and do it. But someone somewhere smooths it over and goes, I tell you what we do. If he wasn't so hands-on, if he wasn't kind of person who kind of keeps an iron grip on everything, he would shout that out in the boardroom. And other people would go and implement it and say, okay, let's just tweak this slightly. Let's say you can only have a blue tick if you actually justify one, yeah, like you're Stephen King. But those people who get a blue tick should pay for it. They're super users. They can afford it. Let's do that. And then he can say that was his idea all along. He says, no, that's what we've got to do. What I say goes, anyone can have a blue tick if they pay $8. And what happened was people were buying a blue tick and then pretending to be fucking Nintendo and posting pictures of Mario sticking the finger up. And everyone, oh, yeah, you see that? Why that was a flawed idea. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, the thing with Twitter is that he wanted to buy Twitter and then he didn't, but he had to buy them anyway. I think is a very kind of simplistic version of what, you know, the business pages would give you, a more sophisticated version of that. But he entered into an agreement to buy Twitter, and for like $44 billion, and then did some due diligence on the company, where I think that's what you're saying. He found out that they're actually not making any money, because again, a lot of these people are people with great ideas and not necessarily smart business people, right? So it doesn't surprise me that you say that while Twitter is this massive, pervasive thing, they've managed to not kind of make it make very much money, because a lot of people run these companies fucking poorly, yeah?
Yeah.
And the thing was, when he found that out, whatever due diligence he did, he found that out and said, oh, this is shit, I don't want to buy Twitter. The existing owners of Twitter sued him and said he'd already entered into an agreement to buy them. So he's made, for someone who's such a smart businessman, he made a bit of a huge tactical error there, because he'd, whatever he signed, committed him to buying Twitter, even if that due diligence brought stuff to light that put him off. And I'm sure he would have wished that he would have entered into some sort of preliminary, I don't know what you call it, heads of agreement or something to buy Twitter, depending on what the due diligence says, and reserve the right to pull out if the due diligence says that Twitter is a financial basket case, yeah? But for whatever reason, and the American court system is fucking strange, so maybe the old people at Twitter are at fault and Elon Musk has just been unlucky here, but they were able to sue him and force him to buy Twitter. But he didn't want to buy Twitter, and he spent $44 billion that he didn't want to spend on Twitter, and Twitter was probably overvalued for that. And it's not just that it's not making enough money. He spent billions buying it, and now he's got to recoup that somehow. And I've seen that shit before. Do you remember when RBS went tits up?
Yes.
But one of the things that made them go tits up during the big financial crash was that they bought the banking group ABN AMRO, or a Dutch bank. They also have operations in Brazil and Chicago and various places like that. And RBS were trying to buy it as part of a consortium with two or three other financial institutions. And what they were going to do is they were going to break them up. And different bits of the consortium were going to get different bits of this weirdly shaped Dutch bank with an operation in Brazil. There's not many of those. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, Barclays got in on the act and were racking up the price. They got into a bit of a bidding war. Barclays wanted to buy them, and the price went up, the shares went up, and it became a bit of a competition to see who was actually going to buy them. Price got too high. One of the consortium members in the bid with RBS pulled out and said, guys, we only wanted the Brazilian bank. I think it was Santander or something like that. And because they're based in Spain, like that bit of like Spain and Portugal, the Brazilian bank would sort of fit, like the language and everything else. And they said, oh, we're not doing it. We're pulling out. And instead of saying, oh, this doesn't work anymore, RBS went ahead and bought it anyway.
Right, fuck's sake.
And Barclays went, oh, we dodged a bullet there. I didn't want to pay that much, but I'm really glad that one of my rivals in the banking world has just overpaid for an acquisition. I wonder if Barclays ever really wanted to buy them. But because Fred Goodwin, one of the a bigger cunt than Elon Musk, let's be fair, insisted on going ahead, it's because they're big overgrown children and they don't like to lose. And ego takes over. But anyway, a lot of what Musk is doing at the moment is he didn't want, you know, he wanted to buy Twitter, but then pulled out and they made him buy anyway. And he paid too much for Twitter. He's paid billions he didn't want to pay, and he's got to find ways to make money. And because of some of the initial stuff that he's talking about, advertisers have pulled out, so it's all getting worse. So it's kind of in a bit of a spiral now. But I know what you mean. It's, if he comes in and wants to make changes and people just throw their dummy out, I can totally understand that. I mean, I can totally understand someone going, I'm just trying to make changes. You're not the one who has to try and make this work financially. So I kind of see your point.
Well, yeah, the thing is that I think the problem with this whole like Elon Musk thing is that I think he's a bit of a walloper, and he comes across quite badly. He comes across as quite petulant, which you're going to do when you are so used to winning when you've made $260 billion. Like that is just naturally what is going to happen. But what is pissing me off is that Twitter is an absolute fucking hive. Like, it's rank, and it needs to be fixed because it's hemorrhaging money. And Twitter would not exist if the people before kept running it, because they can't afford to just hemorrhage that amount of money every day. Like, that, how much is that per year? That's got to be like over a billion a year. 1.2 billion a year?
Yeah, it's not good.
So, people getting annoyed when he says $8 to... I mean, folk are spending fucking like £90 a month on Sky Sports and putting their money in Rupert Murdoch's pocket, but they're annoyed when they can't put money in... it's not even going into Elon Musk's pockets to make sure that Twitter's actually a viable fucking website. The main criticism of Elon Musk is, like you say, the kind of 18-hour days and like stuff like that, and how there's like a Twitter have... Like someone posted a picture from Twitter HQ where there was a bed and a wardrobe in there. Mm-hmm. And Elon Musk's retort was, well, I'm encouraging, you know, people, if they feel overtired, that they can just stay and, you know, have a place to rest. So that was his argument. That's not him. He's saying he's not forcing people to sleep at work. He's giving them a place to feel like they can, you know, what if they feel too tired, they can take a place, you know, to rest. So how do you feel about that? Do you feel that that's what Elon Musk's saying is the truth? Or do you think he's actually making people stay at work when they should be going home to their loved ones?
My cynical hat says this is just how he likes to do things. He likes to work people. There's a lot of talk about how that's how he did things at Tesla, because he would make these wild claims. We're going to have this roadster out. It's going to go 220 miles an hour and do 0-60 in 2.1 seconds. And it's going to be ready next year. And his own team say, we're at least 3 years away from being ready. And it's like, fuck you, I don't care. And I think it's a case of, you know, for me, I think it's a case of he's one of those people who doesn't respect other people's time. Because rather than going, right, I'm going to talk with the board and say, this is what I want to do. And it's, and again, this is not unique. Elon Musk is not the only person who's like this, but there's an element in corporate culture of we have to do what the boss says, even what the boss said is fucking stupid. And there was a very kind of famous guy called Bob Townsend who turned Avis around. They went from being 1/5 the size of Hertz, and 5 years later they were the same size as Hertz because he was so good at running them. And he said one of the most important things he ever did was making sure there was someone on the board whose job was completely safe, who could tell him whenever they felt like it that he was talking shit.
Yeah.
Because he understood that people who report to him or people who are more junior than him would go, oh, I better do what the boss says. And he says, I'm writing a book about how good I am at business, and maybe one in three of my ideas were good. And I need to have a corporate culture in which people can tell me there's a problem with what I've just suggested. But not everyone is that forward thinking. A lot of people will go, this is what I want to do, do what I say. And you just get fucking driven. You get driven into doing shit things because people are afraid to fucking challenge the boss. So I don't think Elon Musk invented that problem, but I think he has fallen prey to it. And I think he's just got this, oh, this is what needs to be done. Everyone should work hard. Sometimes you get these bosses, well, you don't understand why other people would like have a fucking home life. Because, well, why isn't this company the only thing that matters to you? It says, well, I didn't found it and it's not making me $1 billion a year. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not trying to paint him out as this massive ogre for doing this. He's not the only person who's like this. I think he's just part of that general culture that says there is, especially in America, there's that attitude that like working all the hours is somehow a good thing. And I think he likes someone to kind of be like that. I just think he's that kind of a prick.
But I mean, think he's making them work so hard that they just have to stay at work because there's no point going home?
Even if he's not actively saying to them, I want you to work 20-hour days, he's making demands on them that forces that to happen by sacking half the staff and then coming up with a bunch of things that they have to go and implement and just, you know, doing it. You know, there's always going to be fault on both sides when one takes over a company. But, you know, the founders of Twitter were quite keen to sell, so they kind of knew that shit needed to change.
Well, and they wonder, because they were getting $44 billion and it was fucking losing that amount of money every day.
Like, yeah, and the, you know, the existing staff are always going to be resistant to changing things. So that, you know, I'm not sort of saying no one needs to change anything about Twitter, but sacking half the staff on a whim. Because I'm pretty sure that he will have gone, right, these people are all fucking fired, and he hasn't really thought through, are those all the people that I want fired? Because maybe some of the people I've just fired are actually the good people, but I didn't think it through. And then some of the people you want to keep, because you've kind of shaken things up too much too quickly, they leave, and you're like, oh shit, I wanted to keep some of those people. And I've seen it. I think he's quite impulsive. I think he kind of pulls the trigger a little too fast on stuff. The fact that he's, you know, founded six companies and a lot of those things have invented great things has masked the fact that he's not maybe the best boss to work for.
Yeah.
This stuff with Trump, this is weird as well, because I think I don't think the advertisers pulled out because he wanted to make changes to Twitter and force people to work hard. I think a lot of the advertisers have pulled out of Twitter because they didn't like the way he kind of seems to be very, very sympathetic to people on the far right and Donald Trump and people like that. And he, you know, before he bought Twitter, he was saying stuff like, there's a woke mind virus has infected society. He's been talking in the same fucking language as some of these fucking far right online assholes that all get magnified on social media. He thought that COVID containment policies were fascist, that the New York Times is a lobbying firm for far left politicians. He's made a lot of anti-trans comments. He endorsed Ron DeSantis for president in 2024. I don't know how much of this is him just trying to kind of provoke people and stuff, but I just think he's one of those people who, he leans politically to the right, not because he's really into that ideology, but because leaning politically to the right is more likely to get him what he wants, and he's all about what he wants. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't like the fact that regulation and working practices and health and safety and people having a 48-hour week maximum and fucking, you know, data protection, meaning he's got to look after the servers and all of this stuff, stops him doing what he wants, when he wants, the way he wants. And I personally think that's why a lot of this stuff comes out. I think that's a lot of why these big business people get in bed with like nasty right-wing ideologies, because it's like, oh, I want this. Why can't I have this? Why do these little people's fucking opinions matter? I want my yacht. And I think when it comes down to it, he's a great inventor and a very talented guy, but he's also a bloke who just wants another yacht, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, I think his personality means that he isn't too fussed about the yacht. I think he wants to be, he's got the arrogance to want to seem like he can change the big mess that Twitter is. And I think what's getting in the way of that is that he doesn't like that people are telling him no for a change, because it's different when you own a company like Tesla and you call the shots. When Twitter is a, you know, it's basically a public domain, isn't it? It's, you know, over 1 billion users. And if they say they don't like your changes, go fuck yourself. They'll see a downturn in activity on the site, and he's basically being told to go and fuck himself. So it's a kind of a different dynamic to when you are the boss of that company, and you can say, right, well, we're actually going to make the cars this way for this price with this type of material and stuff like that. It's different when you can't really call the shots on how to fix it.
And I just think he's content. As I mentioned this earlier, in this discussion, but he's contending with stuff on with managing Twitter that he's not ever had to manage before. You know, whatever he did at Tesla, he's never had trillions and trillions and trillions of pieces of information, including people's personal data and messages and stuff that are on there, and potential legal liability for things that people have said or not said or not done on Twitter, that are all being stored in a big data center. And if that goes down for even a fucking hour, they're in trouble. I don't think there's a lot of stuff to do with managing Twitter that he's never had to worry about before. But it's weird. I mean, do you have a thought on why he bought Twitter? What did he want to do with Twitter? Have you got any thoughts on why he might have done that?
I think genuinely the arrogance of being able to say, yeah, I can change this website and make it seem like I've changed it for the better, if that makes sense. So he thinks, oh, well, look at me, I can fix this, and, you know, it'll be this free speech thing, because we've spoken about cancel culture in the past, and I do think Twitter plays its part in it, and I think he takes issue with that. I think he doesn't like that, you know, someone can be on Twitter and can say the wrong thing, and then that's them cancelled by, you know, basically the mob. Now, whether they were cancelled for the right or wrong reasons, usually it's for the right reasons, because people getting cancelled are usually cunts. I think he's trying to change that. I think he's trying to say, look, even if you say the wrong thing, we shouldn't have this person, you know, banned or kicked off the platform unless it's for, like, exceptional circumstances. So he said things like Donald Trump inciting violence for the Capitol riots is, you know, it's a violation. You know, it's too much free speech letting that guy be on the platform. But I genuinely think he thinks he's fixing it, but he's not. I don't. It's to do with his arrogance. I don't think it's to do with he doesn't give a shit about money and turning it into a viable business. I just don't think it's the arrogance of being able to say, look, I fixed Twitter.
He had some spare time and decided he was gonna get in there. You see, because I think there is an element of cancel culture, and people can get, you know, an absolute Twitter storm on them for saying the wrong thing, and people who've perhaps not said anything that bad, or perhaps just kind of poorly worded something, can get the same kind of flaming that a genuine arsehole gets. And, you know, we discussed that before. But do you think he's got any answers, for example, to the fact that there are some really fucking nasty people who exploit that situation? It's the same thing as we have freedom of speech in this country up to a point, and then Islamic fucking terrorists sympathising, like jihadists, will use that freedom of speech to kind of provoke a storm, and they're using our own freedoms against us. And there's a lot of that kind of shit going on that it's not that easy to fix, because one of the reasons why we have this problem with cancel culture is that people will react and go, oh, this person said a terrible thing, that was really harmful, we have to stop that. And then you say, okay, because you fucking knee-jerk reacted to that, we now have a problem in that people who aren't as bad as that are being affected as well. Do you know what I mean? Because cancel culture is a flawed reaction to a problem. And I wonder if he's got any answers to that problem. Because it's very easy to be a free speech absolutist when you're not the CEO of Twitter and legally liable for the shit that goes down on it. Do you know what I mean? It's very easy for someone sitting on the sidelines to say, I am a free speech absolutist. Okay, mate, well, you fucking unpick this where someone's fucking house gets firebombed because somebody said something about them on Twitter. Or when, like, members of the far right are constantly promoting, like, white, you know, the white great replacement myth and fucking coordinating coups against the government. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, sort that out, mate, because now it's your job to sort it out.
Yeah, I think that's his problem, is that free speech is something that you're never going to be able to achieve. So he's taking issue. Have you seen that thing where I think it's called @ElonJet, where it tracks his movements whenever he flies anywhere?
Yeah.
And he's banned the account, saying it's a breach of privacy, but they've got the freedom to do that under your kind of absolutist ideas that they should be allowed to tweet your, you know, where your flight's going and where it's landing at what time, because you said it's okay. And then he said, oh, but my 10-year-old son was followed by paparazzi and stuff like that, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, under your rules, like, if that's put on Twitter and they can know the location of your 10-year-old son, that's because you want that.
Yeah.
So I think he's finding out that free speech is such a flawed idea that you can't actually have it, because you can't actually have it. You can't have people online using the N-word.
There's always going to be limits to it. And people continually wrestle with this idea that I do want to have free speech and I don't want to have cancel culture, but we've got to have some rules. And the problem with that is that you always spend all your time talking about people who want to take a big shit on the rules, because most of us are actually, it's like anything, it's like it's the free speech version of why we all have to carry our liquids in fucking plastic bags on a plane, because some arseholes had an idea to fucking plant a bomb. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what these people like fucking, you know, Candace Owens and Donald Trump and all these far right people and their far left sort of extremist equivalents on the other side and fucking Islamic fundamentalists and everyone else who use social media against us, they are the kind of fringe who kind of, they're the tail wagging the dog. And it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to wrestle with. And I think what we kind of need society to do is at least keep wrestling with it, at least keep kind of battling for it. But when I look this up, right, why exactly does Elon Musk want to buy Twitter? he kind of like what you said. He said when he bought it, he's buying it to help humanity. I didn't buy the film to make more money. I did to try and help humanity and make it work better and all of this stuff. But then analysis of it said, you know, is there something underlying that? Is there something underlying his, you know, because when I thought about it, well, is there some technology innovation? Is there something to do with communications? Is there something he's trying to do? Do you know what I mean? Because he bought Tesla because he saw the potential of building electric cars. He founded PayPal because he saw this opportunity to, like, you know, make online payment work. And I just wondered, you know, was there some business or technological or innovation decision that he genuinely wanted to do? And there was this worry that maybe he wanted to profit from their data. He wanted to, he saw, you know, he could influence the market for his other companies. Maybe he's got some idea of how you can use the algorithms and user data and other stuff to kind of make money in some other ways. Or is it just something as basic as he wants to use, you know, as much as he's a free speech absolutist, he wanted Twitter to kind of be his mouthpiece for his other companies. You know, there's all sorts of speculation. It's a bit, you know, uncertain about what he's trying to do. Have you heard any stories about what's going on with the rest of Tesla, though, with the rest of his companies?
No, what's happening?
Because there's word that all may not be all that well with Tesla.
Oh, dear. What's going on?
Tesla faces billions of dollars in losses from its new plants. It's got supply chain problems. Lockdown really impacted them. He's been putting a lot of money into kind of products that don't work, like an electric truck, because you can't get one to kind of work with a small enough battery to actually have any room left over to actually, you know, carry a load. The quality control issues have been emerging about his company. And he's pissing up some of his kind of, you know, maybe Trump's not so bad type bizarre political rantings actually piss off the exact customer base that he needs to buy Tesla cars.
Yeah.
So he's got reliability and quality control issues on the main moneymaker of Tesla, which is the basic cars that you see driving around. He's poured money into, like, driverless cars and, new types of vehicle that don't work. And he might have done a lot of damage to his Tesla brand. So this might be... this might have been a throw of the dice to try and help Tesla with problems that he got into, or it could be he's now getting into these problems because he's flown too close to the sun to try and take Twitter on as well. But there are rumors that this might be a bit of a tricky time for all of his businesses.
That's interesting.
You've got some business researchers talking to CNN saying that there is actually a genuine, not immediate, but genuine risk of bankruptcy. And apparently they weren't profitable until they got into China, but China doesn't allow companies to move money made in China out of the country. And you know how companies do well, you know, it's like that they make money in all these different places and then they move it to the most profitable place to declare the profits.
Yeah.
But if you make money in China, it's got to stay in China.
That's, I'm sure he'll figure it out. I feel like he's a better businessman than he is a social media operator. But do you think it's fair to call him a Scrooge McMusk? Do you think he's, you know, as cunty as some of these other business? Like, if I was to think of a pure horrible asshole, I'd be thinking of, like, Donald Trump or, like, your Prince Andrews or Kanye West is a fucking prick at the moment. Would you bracket him in with these guys? Or do you think he's just... he's just an arrogant business owner.
Well,
you know,
to try and tie it in with the Scrooge theme, the message of A Christmas Carol and Ebenezer Scrooge was that redemption was possible for him. That he started out, he was fairly decent, and he's kind of, you know, he's been twisted up in a few different ways. He's gone down the wrong path, and there is actually an opportunity for him to kind of sort it out and fix it. Because at the end of Christmas Carol, I'm extending the metaphor about as far as it will go right now. But if you're going to talk about Scrooge, Scrooge wasn't an irredeemable character. I don't think you could do a Scrooge story about Donald Trump, because the Ghost of Christmas Past would come along and say this is what happened, and Trump would just say fake news. I didn't do that. So I don't think he's as bad as those people. But you wouldn't, you know. But that's the whole point of Scrooge, is that maybe he just needs fucking to, you know, give his head a shake. and things would get better. I mean, one of the things about him is that he's, you know, not all of his companies have worked. Some of his companies only succeeded because someone bought the IP for there. He's founded like a bunch of companies, and the ones that have been most successful, you know, that have made his name and his money have been Tesla and SpaceX. So even though he's a good businessman, he's the sort of good businessman who can have a company kind of fold under him, and he'll just go on and do something else.
Yeah.
And when they look back in his career, they'll say he had more successes than failures. But all the people whose fucking Tesla cars stopped working and lost their shares, you know, lost their share value in Tesla, won't be quite so happy. Do you know what I mean? Because he's an entrepreneur. He's a disruptor. And I think, so it's not that he's not the worst fucking person out there. The worst CEOs out there in the world are the Koch brothers, who are actively funding fascism and climate change. They are fucking despicable people. And he's not as bad as them because they're irredeemable. You wouldn't do the Scrooge story about them because they'd be confronted with everything they've done wrong and they'd say, so fucking carry on being cunts. You do the story about Musk because you just think, there was this idea of Musk as being, you know, I think we're talking about him because I think we've all, I think deep down we're a little bit unhappy that this guy has actually turned out like this, you know?
Yeah. No, I think...
Because I think he could be better.
Yeah, I think what he's doing is actually really good. Like, electric cars are, you know, the way forward, and the stuff he's doing with SpaceX is interesting. And I genuinely think he is trying to fix Twitter because he thinks he can. And I don't think he... I think he's a bit naive with this whole free speech idea of thinking it'll work, but it just won't.
And he's got to be a different kind of boss because he's, and I've seen this, seen this all the time. It's all very well being the kind of boss and everything you say goes and everything else. And, you know, they can always say that the people who left and don't like him and say bad shit about him and just couldn't hack it and all that sort of thing. But at some point, you know, it happened to Henry Ford, and well, Henry Ford was a genuine fascist, and Elon Musk just flirts with the far right. It's not that bad. But one of these problems is that you can't have companies run on the whims and opinions of one person. You have a board, and you have divisions, and you have people who report to you telling you things for a fucking reason. Someone has to be able to go to Musk and say, this is the shit with the data center. This is a data protection issue. We have to address this. And if he's the kind of person who says, fuck you, work 18 hours a day, sleep in that bed in the corner and do what I tell you, it's not going to work. So he needs to, even if what he's trying to do to Twitter to kind of make it better is the right thing, he needs to learn to manage in a better way, which is not it's not a very exciting message. Because we always, it's better to have a vision and it's better to kind of pursue that vision. And no one thinks it's particularly sexy to say, let's have a meeting and talk to people and kind of work out what the right answer is. It's not sexy, but it's the fucking right thing to do. Because shit doesn't get done properly unless you're the kind of person who listens to people. And I think he needs to learn to listen to some of the people that work for him. And if he, you know, that's quite a big thing for him, I think, to try and work with. Because, you know, Tesla may well have revolutionized the electric car market, but everyone's doing it now. You know, it's like everyone is able to make electric cars now. So if he wants to continue to be an innovator, he can't just say electric truck, snap his fingers and make it happen. He's actually got to knuckle down and deal in things like business change and implementation. And if he's going to make Twitter work, he's got to do all that shit as well. So, but like you, I don't think he's the worst CEO out there. I don't think he's the worst person in the entire world. There are some stuff that he's said and done, which I think is fucking bang out of order. But maybe there is maybe not this Christmas, but maybe some Christmas, he'll have an epiphany and start being less of a cunt.
Maybe.
We'll see. We promised people a chat about Elon Musk. We promised people, or we gave people an answer to the hint of the DPD story that you'd mentioned. The other thing we will leave people with, and you know, given that it's Christmas, we should give them everything that we normally promise, is to talk about Florida Man. So unless there's anything else you want to say about Elon Musk, should we go and visit Florida Man for Christmas?
Let's go visit Florida Man for Christmas.
Now, these are a little bit... I've got the list of Florida Man headlines. I'm going to go through the ones that are a bit... I haven't curated them with my usual care, which isn't that much. But let's go through some of these headlines. The first Florida Man is, in fact, Florida Woman.
Oh.
Florida Woman demands taxpayer-funded BDSM dungeon to be set up at city council meeting.
Yes.
that's just, that's beautiful. That headline tells you everything you need to know. This is grim in some ways, but beautiful in others, so I'm just going to say it. Florida man beat his flatmate's raccoon with a hammer and threatened to kill neighbour with a sewing needle.
Fantastic.
The bit that's kind of caught my attention here is, why does that person have a raccoon?
That's not Florida.
That's not a pet. That's not a pet.
Have you seen that video of the raccoon holding a bit of cotton candy and it drops it into the puddle and it dissolves and the look on the raccoon's face when his cotton candy disappears?
No, but I have to go and look that.
Oh my God. What a betrayal.
Florida man dies after attempting to microwave a microwave.
He thought he was doing some sort of like nuclear fission. He thought he was going to have like unlimited power.
I don't know what he was trying to do. Some of these things you're never sure. It's such an easy headline. Maybe some of these are urban myths. This is a good one. Florida man, a phone repair man, sends customers explicit video to himself and then gets busted for it. A woman had sent him her mobile phone for repair. He proceeded to scroll through all her messages and videos. He found one that is an explicit video of her and texted it to himself. And proceeded to be caught doing so.
Oh, wow. You know what? There's a lot of that. Because there's fucking, like, there was a guy at my work who was only, like, covering up my work for a couple, like, shifts. He was from a different store. And, like, he pure, like, told his pal, oh, there's this, I've been working at this store for a couple shifts and there's this girl there, she's pure hot. And his pal went, what's her name? And looked her up on Facebook, added and said, oh yeah, my pal told me about you, I just thought I'd give you an ad. Like, how
Jesus Christ.
You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck?
These things sort of reveal why so many women are just looking over their shoulder whenever they go out of the house, it's horrible. Fucking hell. Getting back from serious global issues to frivolous laughing at other people's misfortune. Florida man unintentionally has 6,000 pounds of caramelized onions.
Yes.
I don't even know what's that. 6,000 pounds of onions go... Oh, once you actually get past the headline, 6,000 pounds of onions go up in flames on Florida interstate. I see. That's why they're caramelized. A truck driver escaped injury, but his haul of several thousand pounds of onions wasn't as lucky after his vehicle burst into flames on the interstate in Florida.
That smelled amazing. Though.
His vehicle caught fire after one of the tyres blew out. He pulled over to see what happened. He found flames coming from the side of the trailer and all of his onions caught fire.
I love to think that he only pulled over because his tyre blew out, but no other people driving past him thought to toot their horn fucking lorry was
look
on
at
fire.
You're on fire.
Oh, God.
Florida man steals iPad and is caught because they tracked the iPad. Says to the policeman on his arrest, I knew that thing would track me.
Oh! What a cunt.
Florida man arrested for threatening a mass shooting despite not owning any weapons. I'm not sure if that the headline is, like, because it's Americans, maybe what they're criticising is, you know, mate, if you want to have a mass shooting, buy some fucking guns. Or maybe they're just laughing at him for being that stupid. Florida man throws Christmas tree at his wife because she asked him to help with dinner. Florida man attacked by alligator while washing his hands in a pond.
Oh, that's gross.
This is actually Florida man and Florida black bear. Florida man leaves his Chick-fil-A takeaway, which is kind of like, it's like chicken takeaway chicken sandwiches. Or I think his order is delivered on his doorstep. You know, this kind of no contact delivery.
Okay.
And it's promptly stolen and eaten by a hungry bear.
There's bears in Florida.
Yep.
I bet they're sweaty.
So before he could go out and pick up his delivery on the doorstep, a large black bear walks up and starts eating it.
Amazing.
Doesn't even leave. Just sits on the doorstep and eats it on camera while the guy sits in the house and watches the bear eat his dinner on CCTV.
That's incredible. Oh,
that's beautiful. I salute that bear. That's probably not as that's not quite the cocaine bear, but I reckon they've got addictive substances in American fast food. Drunk Florida man sets police car on fire and then goes back into the bar to finish his drink.
These can't all be real. These are ridiculous. These are absurd.
And let's see if there's a fun one to end on. I saw the same ones coming through. Yeah, I'll finish with this. This is probably a lot creepier than the headline, but I think it's a funny headline. Naked Florida man found in apartment of two women is arrested after he tells police he believes his wife is in the apartment, but is unsure which of the two women is his wife.
What? Oh, man. What a place.
It's always fun. And again, I sometimes wonder how true some of these headlines are, because it's such an easy headline to say. But then usually when you click on the headline, you go, yep, that is true. Fucking hell, can you believe it?
Do you know what's mental, though? When we went there, did you get the impression of the place is that mental?
No, but I think we were, I think we were shielded from the craziness of it, because I don't think it happens in kind of the big cities and tourist areas. I think it happens in like weird little tiny small towns like fucking Pensacola and places like that.
Tallahassee.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a crazy place, and we'll never stop loving them for it, even though we probably want to continue to just stay away and watch from a safe distance. Did you have anything else you wanted to tell the lovely people before we break up for Christmas, mate?
No. I'm trying to think if anything funny's happened at work. What I'm finding a lot is that at work, because I'm relatively young, I'm only 26, I feel like I'm about 2006, but a lot of customers will have gripes and they'll get really arsy with me because I look young. And I think they don't think
patronizing.
They don't think I'm a manager because I'm too young. It couldn't be possible for a guy as young and as good looking as myself to be a manager. And this cunt.
You see, I was about to challenge you for saying you're good looking, but that would reflect badly on me. So carry on.
And this guy, he was being a real cunt to like another customer in the shop. But basically, it's so busy at the moment, and I was putting some stock on the shelf, and the aisle that I happen to be in is the most narrow aisle of the shop. And the guy was just huffing and puffing, and he went, "Can you move that? It's in the way." And I went, "Right, no worries." Like, a bit blunt to him, because I didn't like the way he was speaking to me. But then a customer came up to me and said, yeah, he was being really arsy to me, like, he'd made her feel uncomfortable because he was just making these, like, rude comments because, like, people were in a supermarket doing shopping. Like, what a novel idea. And he was annoyed that he was having to walk around their trolleys as opposed to them moving their trolleys for him. So anyway, I go away and I come back, and he's huffing and puffing again. And I said, "Sorry, is there a problem? Because I don't like your attitude." This is what I said to him. I said, "I don't like your attitude. Like, you're huffing and puffing going around here." And he went, "Well, yes, you're blocking the aisle." And I went, "No, I'm not. I've left enough of a gap beside my cage, which had all of this, like, stock on it, for people to get in just behind the cage to pick up whatever they need. And then there's a massive gap next to the cage for people to walk down. If someone's coming down and already on their way through, let them buy in. They'll let you buy." And he went, "You need to come up..." He basically says, like, you need to do something better. I went, "Well, what would you suggest? Because I need to put stock on the shelf. It is very busy, after all, being the festive period, right?"
This is fucking unbelievable. Right, everyone has to walk through supermarkets where there are cages out with people restocking the shelves.
Yep.
And the alternative to that is no fucking stock on the shelves.
So I went to him. I said, "What would you suggest? Because you seem to have loads of ideas, but no solutions." And he went, "Oh, I don't know. Ask your manager." And I went, "I am a manager, mate. That's why I'm asking you, because this is literally the only way I can do this." And he doesn't really have a reply to that. And I went, "All I'm asking is you be respectful. I've had a customer complain about you, saying that you're being rude and you weren't being very nice to her." And he went, "Who?" And I went, "You want me to tell you the identity of the customer that you were very rude to and made her uncomfortable so you can make her feel uncomfortable again?" He went, "I just highly doubt that she said that." I went, "Doubt it all you want, mate. I'm asking you to be be respectful, and he kind of grumbles and kind of fucks off. And I was like, you know what? And then as I thought he'd left. I thought he'd walked and like kind of stormed away, but he was still next to the cage. Another customer was like kind of giving me that look customers give you when another customer's being a cunt. And I went, oh, Merry Christmas. And the guy was still there next to the cage. And I thought he'd gone away. And I made this really like nasty, not nasty, but like pricky comment about Merry Christmas. And he was like, he just shot me a look. I didn't even care, to be honest, at that point, because the guy was a nasty piece of work. Like,
yeah, you see, that's the awkward bit, isn't it? It's like on it's on the tube when people like mad off for each other and then realise they're going to be stuck together like for another 17 stops.
Yeah. It's just something about this time of year where people become.
Yeah, look, Christmas is really stressful for a bunch of reasons, and but people should try and be kind, and not be so entitled. And sometimes, you know, if something annoys you, sometimes just fucking sucking it up for 2 seconds and realizing actually that does need to be there. Maybe I can work around that. You know, you don't have to, you know, don't suck it up when someone hits your car. I'm not talking about the DPD thing, but you know, those minor day-to-day irritations, sometimes you just need to fucking bite your tongue sometimes.
Well, I had to bite my tongue, actually. I told you about this, but I hit another car in a car park the other day, but I don't think I was at fault. The only reason I was at fault was because I was reversing. So basically, it's hard to describe this so people can picture this, but I was reversing out of a space and I'd looked over my blind spots, looked in all my mirrors, and I was clear. And then I'd reversed out, and within the 2 seconds it had taken me to reverse out, this car was there, and I'd bumped into his right side bumper.
Mm.
And I come out, and I said, mate, what's happened to you? Like, am I at fault? And he went, I think as you're reversing out, you're at fault. And I went, well, what happened? Because I checked all my mirrors and looked over, nobody was there. And then I've come out, and he went, oh, well, I was correcting my car. The guy next to me had parked like an idiot. And he was basically, I couldn't see this guy's car. There was a car next to me, and he was parking like 2 spaces over, and he was coming out to correct. And he's seen me slowly creeping out.
Coming together at the same time.
He must have seen my reverse lights coming on. And then I went, right, fine. It was barely fuck all damage. Mm. And he goes and gets a quote and he's like, oh yeah, I've been quoted £617 for this damage.
Oh, fuck off.
And I went, I looked at it and it said,
£617 is a new bumper, fuck that.
Right, so he sent me the invoice from a body shop, and I went, well, that was your first fucking mistake. And they were charging £350 for labour.
Yeah, that's
bullshit. And I texted the guy back, and I went, mate, that's absurd. Like, I'm biting my tongue, but I don't feel like I was fully to blame there. The only reason I was to blame is that under the law, because I was reversing, I have to accept responsibility. I'm not a fucking owl, so I'm not able to fucking fully rotate my head the entire time. So I feel a little bit aggrieved, and therefore I will not be paying £600. I said, there's a guy I know that fixed my partner's motor for a much more reasonable price than that. He went, well, it's my missus's car, and she's just paranoid. It's a few months old. And I said, I don't care if the car's like 10 years old or 10 minutes old. I'm not fucking paying that. He went, well, what do you mean? What do you think's absurd about it? I went, how can you be saying there's £350 worth of labour? They were charging £50 an hour and 7 units. And I said, how do they know it's going to be 7 hours work when the work's not completed yet? Didn't have a reply. And he was like, fine, yeah, we'll use your guy. I was like, you know what? You know that way you have to bite your tongue because legally you have to bite your tongue until the point comes where someone's trying to rip the arse out of you.
Yeah.
And I was like, as soon as it was done, blocked the guy. Didn't want to speak to him. I was like, so, do you know what it was? It was his missus's uncle's, like, pal's body shop. So what they've done there is they've gone, oh, well, yeah, there you go. Like, oh, I was like, well, I don't give a fuck. Like, I'm too socially inept to, like, be like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Like, just cave over. I will challenge it, and I'll hit your car again if you speak to me like that, and like in that tone ever again. Basically, is the way I saw it. But yeah, that was me having to bite my tongue. Oh, one of the dogs is humping the other dog.
Oh, excellent. I hope they realise that's not how you make babies.
Well, annoyingly, the older dog who's meant to be telling the younger dog off for humping is just letting him do it. You sold me, queer giraffe.
And just to be clear, that is a quote from a film. We don't endorse any of those opinions.
What? Only giraffes?
Anyway, I think that's us for this year, for Christmas, and for this episode of the Adamsons Versus. Thank you very much for listening. I hope this has cheered you up. I hope our message of hope about DPD and about Scrooge McMusk is uplifting while you get ready for Christmas. Have a wonderful festive season, and we'll be back with another Adamsons Versus sometime soon. This was the Adamsons versus Scrooge McMusk. Next time it'll be the Adamsons versus something else. The music was District 4 by Kevin MacLeod. Look forward to speaking to you again next time.